You're listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas.
This is it. Finally, the time has arrived and I cannot be happier. It's been such a difficult time trying to track this guy down, but I finally have him here on The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas. This is a special 20th anniversary edition of The Crossover and it's brought to you by Turkish Airlines. It's the 20th anniversary edition because this guy was instrumental in the 2017 EuroLeague Championship, and we'll touch on that a little bit later. Let me introduce to my listeners Mr. Luigi Datomi, as we all know him, though. Gigi, how you doing, my man?
What's up, Joe? How you doing? I'm pretty good. What about you?
I'm doing good, man. First of all, I want to check in with you. You know, I'm here in Madrid, Spain, and Spain and Italy have been hit hard by this virus, man. Just want to see if you and the family and everybody are doing okay.
Yes, yes, I'm good. My family's good. My close ones are good. And, you know, nowadays, every time we talk to the phone to people, we say, how are you? But we really mean it, you know. And yes, like everybody, we are waiting for everything slowly will be back to normal life, let's say.
Yeah, we're looking forward to that. What? Give me the inside scoop here. What? Pro athlete, I was there at one time in my life, a long, long, long time ago. And I thought that I saw everything in my life. And now this comes up. You know, we're not prepared for something like this because we're basically robotical. We're you know, you have to be at practice at 10 o'clock, at the bus at 6 o'clock, at the gym at 5 o'clock, at the video, at the dinner. How do you deal with this change of right in mid-season?
I took some time off because my body really needed it. Then I did all some kind of workouts with body weight, with some elastic bands that I have in my apartment, or some Tabata. I never heard about Tabata before, but then I got into this world by YouTube, and it really worked. I mean, it was a nice workout, nothing compared to basketball, but it was a good way to have a sweat and, you know, to keep the, let's say, the tonus up.
Gigi, I'm going to send you a link to my gym that I own here in Madrid, and you could do one of our workouts. And I guarantee it's going to be high intensity. It'll keep you in shape. There's no doubt about it. I see you in Nicola Melli on Instagram a lot, you know, and is it a way for you guys to keep in touch with your fans while the games aren't going on?
Especially in Italy at the beginning of the lockdown, a lot of people started to do this Instagram live to give some company to people who was stuck at home. And yes, I tried to do it by myself, inviting people, and then with Nicolò, who is a very, very, very good friend of mine. We try to do 1 hour live talking. I mean, we are very good friends, so we had a lot of topics to talk. And I'm a little bit more, wild spirit to talk about everything, but he's more street guy, very, you know, he likes to have a program on, now we talk about this, after you talk about that, you know, I'm more wild, and but we, you know, we compensate each other, and now we have our little audience, and now nice. People is waiting for us every Wednesday.
Nice. You know, I joined in a couple times. You didn't say hello to me, so I hung up on you, man. I just got out of there. You didn't say hello to me. Hey, let's get this thing kind of going a little bit. Early childhood, you were born in Montebelluna, Italy. But isn't that like way up north from Sardinia?
Exactly, correct. Northeast.
How do you get back to the island?
Yes, basically, my mom preferred, she rather to have, to give birth where she was from, in Montebelluna, close to Treviso. And then basically after 20 days, we moved in Sardinia. And that's why I feel Sardinia like my home, because I just was born there, but I grew up in Sardinia.
Okay, that's what I kind of assumed, because I didn't see much of a history of you in the north, other than going back to play in Siena, of course. But your dad was the president of the basketball club in your hometown, no?
Yes, correct. He's still the president of this very little club in Olbia, which was the first basketball club in this little town of 60,000 right. people. And I think that's how I started to play basketball, because my older brother, who is 5 years older than me, used to play. So, you know, as a younger brother, you want to imitate your older brother. And I don't remember my first day of basketball because it was something that it was part of our family.
It looked like, for me, from the research I did, that this was almost like a family affair between you, your dad, your brother. And it seemed like, I don't know if the people you played with were already your friends when you joined this club, or did they become friends over time?
A mix of it. I met new friends, but some of my friends were the sons of my father's friends, who they played together back in the years, who they created the club. So, you know, it's a community. Basketball, especially back in the days in the 90s, let's say, it was not so popular in Sardinia and in Olbia. So, yes, it was really a familiar thing. It was a familiar environment, and it was really a special and, I would say, a healthy place where to grow up as a kid.
And then you turn 15, 16 years old, you take off to Siena. Your mother sounds like a person she went back to her hometown to give birth to you. That was important to her. So she sounds like an extremely atypical Italian woman, family woman. How hard was it for her and for you to take off and go away to Siena for 3 years at that point?
It was, you know, that year, I think it was 2003, and I played the Eurobasket under 16, and I was the top scorer of the Eurobasket. And it was the moment to, you know, to make a decision to see if this could be my life, to be a professional player. My mom, because I'm Italian, I'm a typical Italian, my mom didn't allow me to go by myself, a 15 years old kid, in a new town. And not kidding, it was a big sacrifice for my family, because my mom took the decision to follow me and to have our own apartment so she could take care of me. So I was able to think only about basketball and to study, because I was finishing my school. So she was thinking about food, about, you know, cleaning apartment, about laundry. And so I was able to focus on basketball and to study. So it was sacrifice for my family, but it was best decision for me and for, you know, to let me be still a 15 years old kid.
You said you met your mom came. Did your brother go with her and your dad also, or did he stay back and be president of the club and your brother continued to play at the club?
No. That's why I say that it was a big sacrifice for my family, because the family, they from one year to the other, they split. So half family was in Siena, me and my mom, and half family stayed in Sardinia, my brother and my father. Basketball was for my brother especially, you know, a passion. He was still playing basketball. He was studying. He was following his own career. But the family made the sacrifice to be split from one year to the other, because they helped me to follow my dreams and follow my career.
You were like, you know, Luka Doncic and Ricky Rubio before, like, this young thing ever started. You're kind of like the pioneer almost. It's 16 years old playing your first EuroLeague game with Siena. Did you realize at that time what a huge step this was?
You know, Joe, it was a huge step for me, because, as I said, it was coming from a familiar environment to a professional sport. Siena at that time was, they reached the Final Four 2 years in a row. First Barcelona and then Tel Aviv, 2003-2004. I was not any kind of Luka Doncic. I was not any kind of Rubio, because, I was playing in the youth program. My goal was to get there with the senior team. But it was, yes, was my goal. And I knew that, I had to work a lot, because I was practicing with the senior team, with the big team. And I knew that I need a lot of work to be able to play with them.
I don't put a lot of importance on stats. I try not to, because there's so many other things in basketball. But I found a funny stat when you played that year. 32 games you played in the Italian league, and you scored a total of 15 points, and you took 16 shots from the field. But in the EuroLeague, you played in 6 games, you scored 1 point less at 14 points, and only took 12 shots from the field. What was the difference between playing EuroLeague and Italian League? It seemed like you were a little bit more shy in the Italian League than you were in the EuroLeague.
Hey, Joe, look, it was so much time ago that I really don't remember. But honestly, I didn't feel any difference between Italian League and Euro League because it was a very high level right. for the player that I was. The first year, okay, it was a little taste. But this, let's say my third year in Siena, I had a role in the team. I was coming from the bench. Let's say I was playing every game, I would say. And in that year with Recalcati in 2005-2006, I had some also good games against Panathinaikos, I remember. And those years, I felt that I could have a role in that world, let's say.
That's the time where you, as a player, you start to gain that confidence and that feeling where you're not worried about missing shots. You're not worried about making mistakes on the floor. The guys around you, you played with them for 3 years, you feel a bit more comfortable, don't you?
Yes, I would say that I was very aggressive. And some of the veterans like Zukauskas, who was an incredible role model for me, or Marcelo Nicola as well, they told me that I was kind of too aggressive, maybe too excited, trying to do everything that I could. You know, I was very young. I was 17, 18 years old. I had no idea about basketball. I had some talent. I had a lot of desire, but I had no idea about basketball. And those guys helped me a lot to understand a little bit more about basketball, especially with the coach, Charlie Recalcati.
You know, I have to laugh, man, because I played in Victoria when Marcelo Nicola was a young guy coming into the country to play. And it makes me laugh to tell you that you were too aggressive, because believe me, he was way too aggressive when he first arrived in Spain.
I need to tell him. Next time I will see him.
Next time you tell him I said that. I can't believe that he told you to stop being aggressive. That's crazy. Hey, you go from there and you go to Rome, and it's just an incredible 5 years in Rome. And even though you won the Series A MVP, it seems to me the type of person that I've kind of known that you are over the years and studying a little bit about you now is the most important thing to you is the fact that it was almost like you brought basketball back to that city, or you were at least part of bringing basketball back to that city, the fans, the city, the crowd, the game. Was that the most important thing to you about Rome?
You know, Joe, I played 5 years in Rome, and the first year that I came, the goal was to try to win the title. And year after year, the budget was lower, so the goals were lower. But my role inside the team was bigger. And me as a young player, Rome was, I mean, I went to Rome because I wanted that place to be the place where I could create an image of myself. And the last year, it was the only year that we overachieved the expectation of our fans and our club. And yes, Rome is such a beautiful city. There is a lot of passion, but the warmth from the city, the fans never had a particular love or enthusiasm for the team. That year, it was incredible. The gym was a little bit tiny, but we reached the final, and can you imagine, we won game 7 of semi-final to go to the final, and all the fans came into the court like they usually do when you win the title. But let's say the city and the club was so thirsty to success and to have this kind of feeling that we celebrate even just to go to the final. So for me, yes, it was after 4 years of, let's say, underachievement, it was a great satisfaction to bring people back to the gym and to be enthusiastic and happy and proud of their team.
I got to ask you, because a lot of people nowadays, a young generation, don't know about Italian basketball. I grew up in the States. We knew a little bit about European basketball, but most of it came from Italy. You know, back in the day, Bob McAdoo, Kobe's Bryant, Joe Bryant, and they call him Jelly Bean, who played. You know, when I went to Caserta to play, I was scared. I mean, I was nervous to come to Italy because there were so many incredible players that played in that league. And who were the guys, the Italian guys, and maybe the foreign guys that you looked up to when you were growing up that played in Italy?
Yes, Italy was, back in the days, was an incredible league. And me growing up, okay, I didn't watch McAdoo, honestly, because I was maybe too young. But for sure, Ginobili when he was in Bologna. I would say Nakbar, Boki Nakbar, when he was in Treviso, because I was born in Montebelluna, as you say, then it was very close to Treviso. So in my Christmas break, I was going to Montebelluna to visit my grandmother. And when I had possibility I was going to watch Benetton. And then there was Taio Setny. There was Henry Williams, who sadly passed away recently. And Nakin Akbar, and of course Ginobili, as I said, it was Carlton Myers, who was the best Italian player, let's say, those years. And after that, for sure, Andrea Meneghin, Pozzecco, those were the Italian players that made me, you know, follow games on TV.
Gigi, you make me feel so old, man. I played against Andrea Meneghin's father, unfortunately. I played against Dino. He was a beast. Hey, those are five seasons in Rome. You went there at 21 years of age until 26. These are really, for a basketball player, the most important years of your career, because it's where you're starting to develop the physicality, the emotions, the mentality, your confidence and everything. It seems to me like you owe so much to Rome over those 5 years because of the type of player that you are today.
No, for sure, for sure. As I told you, those 5 years, you know, my role was bigger and bigger, and I had more possibility to stay on the court, more responsibility. And so for sure, he helped me a lot to grow up, to have responsibility, to make mistakes, for sure. But for sure, those years were crucial in my career to have, you know, more and more responsibility to be the best player that I could have been.
How many years were you like on the NBA radar? Were they looking at you to go to the NBA to play?
Only my last year in Rome, because can you imagine that the year before I had no other chance either to stay in Rome, either to go in another Italian team. And after that year, that special year that I was MVP and we reached the final, there were even NBA chances. So only that year, some NBA scouts was coming to see me. And so that was the only year that I had the chances to go in NBA.
I don't want to get too much into it because it wasn't, you know, I've read some interviews about you in the NBA, but I do want to get the feeling of what it was like for you to be there. Was it ever a dream for you? Was this a dream come true? Did it just pop up out of nowhere? And what's the experience that you got from the NBA? Even though I've read that you don't want to go back, you've thought about it, you might not like it, you didn't like it, it was a great experience, you went from team to team, but what did you get out of it as a player?
It was a great experience. No, I mean, I want to be clear about this. It was great to me because it was not even a goal. As I told you, the year before, I had, as I said, not even the goal to go in NBA. And then the NBA came. So, of course, I wanted to be part of this. You know, it's something that maybe come 1 year and the year after, you don't have the possibility anymore. So I wanted to try. I was 26. I felt that I was in my prime, let's say, and I want to try this huge challenge. It was tough, and I knew that it was going to be tough. But I came out of it mentally stronger because I stayed a lot of weeks and months without playing, but working my butt off to be ready for this opportunity. And I work a lot of my skills, on my individual skills. So, you know, I got out of it with a lot of confidence in myself as a person, not as a player. Thanks God that this opportunity in Boston came on the second year. So I could able also to play basketball finally in NBA and to have a good opportunity and to enjoy because, you know, you love to go in NBA. I was so happy and so excited to be in NBA. But after a while, you know, we are a basketball player and we want to play basketball. So we see basketball so close from the bench and we want to be part of it. And in Boston, I had fun. I was very well welcomed from the guys in the locker room. I felt part of the team. I felt that I was contributing to the team results. I had fun. And, you know, Boston has also romantic feeling and meaning for me as a fan of basketball. And those 2 years, really, I'm so happy that this happened to my life. It was not the best year, let's say, because it was also tough, but I'm really grateful that this happened and I also could feel this experience in my life.
Have you, we mentioned before about you being with Meli on Instagram, I'm sure that when you played together a couple of years ago before he took off and went to the NBA, I'm sure you guys had a lot of discussions. Did he ask you questions? Did you give him advice? What were the conversations between the two of you before he took off and went to the NBA?
No, you know, we talked for sure about NBA, about my experience. I don't remember, but Nicolò had a huge offer to go in NBA after his Bamberg experience, and he refused to come to Fenerbahce to have this, you know, to do a kind of step-by-step experience. So he was in Bamberg, very good organization, but he wanted to, before to go in NBA, to have a step forward in his career, coming to Fenerbahce. And after this opportunity came again, and he, of course, he joined NBA. But I'm not also the right guy to ask information or advices in NBA, because I had only 2 years in two organization. I think, for example, because he had a very good relationship with Bellinelli, who played 12 years, if I'm not wrong, in NBA with a lot of experiences in different organizations. He is one guy that if I was him, I was asking information. Right. Now, I'm happy that he had a very good season. When he was on the court, he showed that he belonged there. And I'm sure that he's going to adjust in the future also better to have a very good role in his team.
Thanks for all of us that you came back to Europe to play. That was the good thing. We got to see you play a lot more here. And you decided to go to Turkey, Fenerbahce. The first time, other than the States, obviously, that you've played outside of your country. Other offers, other thoughts? Did you want to go back to Italy, but the level wasn't there for you? That's why you went to Fenerbahce. And what was the program? What drew you to Fenerbahce? Because it wasn't the greatest club in Europe at the time.
You know, I was lucky enough after these 2 years in NBA to have different possibilities to choose. Either to stay in NBA, but of course with a minor role, either to come back to Europe with a bigger role. And there were different, let's say, elite teams in EuroLeague. I was really lucky to have this possibility.
No names? Do we get names or not?
You know, CSKA was a big possibility. And, you know, it was very tough decision for me. But, you know, to be a player for Obradovic and in Fenerbahce, which I saw like a club who already did important things because they had their first Final Four in 2015. And they were very ambitious with huge players like at the time, Vezeli and Bogdanic were already there. And I saw that they signed Zlukas and Pero Antic, and they were about to sign Ekpeyudo, who honestly I didn't know at the time. But, you know, an ambitious program with Gherardini, who was the GM, and I knew him because we are both Italian. We never worked together. But, you know, I had this feeling that this was the good possibility to me to have a big role in this team and to achieve big goals for this club, who I knew it was very important to Turkey, but I had no idea until I went in Istanbul and I start to play for Fenerbahce and to live in Istanbul.
Yeah, it's a beautiful place to play, and the fans are incredible. When you have Maurizio and you have Selko, I think it's sometimes a pretty easy decision to go. They have two of the best people that are essentially running the team to be on your side. And plus, as you mentioned, the players, it makes it a little bit easier of a decision. But you coming into a team like that now from the NBA, what's your attitude as you come in? Are you back in that Marcelo Nicola days where someone's got to tell you to, like, hey, step back, relax, we already got a team here? Or do you come in and kind of like find your way and try to fit in?
Hey, Joe, I was starving for basketball because, you know, I put a lot of work in those years, but I missed the competition, I missed the responsibility, and I missed the big stage, let's say. So I knew that I was new in a new team, in a new project, let's say. And of course, I had to show respect. I'm not also the guy and the player to come in a new team and to say, now I will do whatever I want, because I'm not this kind of player and right. I cannot do it. I don't want to do it. I wanted to bring my experience, my talent to win. So I was starving of playing. This I remember. I was really starving to play. And we were creating a new team, basically. So when I came in Fenerbahce, really was everything was very smooth. We knew that we were going to be a team that in the next years we were going to play together. So we were very, very hungry, everybody, to create this new project, let's say. And I felt very comfortable. That's the point. I missed responsibility. I missed competition. So, you know, you have been coached by Jericho, and for sure, Jericho put you under pressure and give you responsibility. And you know that every game, every practice, you are under pressure. So you feel that you are part of something really big.
You mentioned two things. You mentioned, one, the loss in the Final Four before you arrived, and you also mentioned the word project. And you know, I spoke with Selko because, you know, we're still pretty good friends. And it was after that loss I spoke with him, and it was almost like he, and I've never seen Selko in such an acceptable mood of over a loss, because he knew that this was the next step in that project, and he was okay with losing to Madrid in that Final Four here in Madrid. And I think that's what you guys were going for, because it ends up happening where next year you get into a final and you're down 20 points. Do we need to talk about that game or not?
I mean, yes, it's no problem. It's part of it. And yes, I remember. I knew. I followed that Final Four, and it was the 2015 when Fenerbahce lost to Real Madrid. And of course, also when I arrived, I knew that game, it was painful for a lot of players, for the club, and also for the fans. And then came out that in my first season, we met Real Madrid in the playoff series.
Mm-hmm. And you swept them that year, didn't you? I think. Was that 3-0?
Yes, we did. Yeah. 3-0. Yes, we did.
And then the big game where you're down 20 at halftime to Cesca in Berlin. And I went back and I watched this because I wanted to see exactly where you were on the court. You remember where you were?
I was on the bench because a lot of times, I don't remember if I had foul trouble, or a lot of times Jericho do these sub-ins about me and Kalinic, where we play in the same role. So I was on the bench, and I don't know why I was calm in that moment, very calm. I said, for sure we're going to win this. I said, we're going to stop this and we're going to win this game. I was so sure about this. And saw this when Nando De Colò missed the shot. I say, yes, I knew this. And then this crazy tap-in, very difficult to do it. Very difficult from Greapa. When they brought the game to overtime, I say, ah, okay. But it was good, you know, for us to go to overtime, because we were down 20 first half, down 16 the beginning of the fourth quarter. So fourth to go quarter. To overtime, yes, was great to us. But then we came out short.
You know, you're known for your calmness and your coolness, and I've spent 4 or 5 days now researching this, and it took me a while to find the right angle of the video of that last shot. And I was watching you, and you're on the bench behind the assistant coach. You have a towel in your hand, and the shot goes up, and you don't make a move, man. You don't make a move. You're just looking and you're watching. The ball comes off the rim. Carapa grabs it with one hand or whatever, taps it in, and goes in. And your only emotion was you just put your hand on your hips. Normally, someone would throw the towel down. Someone would, like, step on the ground. What are you thinking?
I know I'm weird. Sometimes I react. But most of the time, I like that. I don't know why. I recently, because nowadays everybody's showing all the most important moments on Instagram and this stuff, and they saw Kostas Zlukas' reaction was very funny. That both hands on his head, covering his face. Right. Kostas is very dramatic every time. I said fuck, but you know, it was. Still, we could have the last shot because we had a timeout.
Yeah.
And I think I inbound the ball to Epe, and Epe had a short shot. I think also Kyle Hines had a little piece of the ball, so came out really short. But you know, basketball, it's incredible. Really can give you a possibility until the really last second. So that's my mindset. I try to stay calm until the last second. And then when the buzzer comes, okay, that's the moment to say I'm happy or either I'm sad.
You know, the one of the things I try to live by is, as an athlete, and in life also, but we're talking about sports, obviously, as an athlete, your most difficult competitor is going to be success and failure and how you react to each moment, because so many players can go down by failing, and so many players can lose it also by winning too much because you get too confident. So, you know, you kind of have that even keel where, you know, you don't get too excited when you win and you don't get too upset when you lose. Where does that come from? Is that just your personality?
You know, at the beginning, my first years in Fenerbahce, I was so excited for every title, for every big achievement from the team, because honestly, I had 10 years in Serie A, 2 years in NBA, but I didn't win anything. So, you know, every trophy in Fenerbahce was the first trophy for me at the beginning. So I was so excited. Year after year, we created this reputation that we were one incredible team. So we had to win. And so winning was exciting, and especially in Turkey. But at a certain point, it was, you know, something that we had to do. So it was kind of a relief, not a satisfaction anymore. And I was very sorry and worried about this, because I knew that it was wrong. And that's why also when loss was coming, I was desperate. I mean, not desperate, I was really frustrated and angry and sad. And it was really bad. The moment after the loss, and when you go home and when you're alone and you think about it, it was very bad. But of course, you know, I would rather we played the three finals with Fenerbahce, and of course I would rather to have won all of them. But that loss it was in Berlin against CSKA, gave us the fire to come back the next year and try to win it, because we knew that we had the capability and we knew that we could do it. So, of course, it was better to win it. But after we lost it, we had this feeling that we will try it again and we would do everything to feel this feeling again. This was the mindset.
To this day, is that your most difficult loss?
Yes, it was a very tough moment. Also in national team, we lost the final game to go to the Olympics in 2016. That also was awful. Also in Belgrade against Real Madrid, every loss final is tough. It's very tough. Especially such important stage like Final Four, that you are so close to win EuroLeague, to have such a important space and role in European basketball, and for yourself, for your club, for your teammates. So you feel the sorrow and the sadness and the toughness of the moment. But you know, this is life. When you win, you need to confirm yourself, and when you lose, you need to bounce back. It's easier to say than to do it, but you need to react every time.
The worst part, I'm going to give you the bad news, is as you get older like me, those games will be the ones you'll remember more than the ones you win, unfortunately. Those are the ones I always think about, the ones that got away, you know. But hey, let's get to the 20th anniversary edition now, the most important part. Let's talk about the one you won. You said that loss motivated you guys through the whole next season. The team is on this progressive run. They were not in the playoffs. Then they made it to the playoffs. Then the Final Four. They lost to Madrid. You guys lose that final. You're going up, but the run to get there wasn't a comfortable run. You guys had 7 losses about 20 games into the season, but you're only a couple games behind CSKA. And you finished out in a terrible manner that regular season. You ended up 5-5, but you ended up 2-4 in the last 6 games. What was going on right there with that team? Because it wasn't a team that looked like they were ready and primed to win a championship.
Yes, exactly. I mean, we were coming from 2 Final Four in a row, and the Final Four were hosted in Istanbul. So everybody assumed that we were going to be there. But you need to deserve to be there. And it was a long way. And it was the new formula of EuroLeague with the time 30 games. And yes, we didn't look good from the beginning, for sure. We were basically the same team. And we had a bunch of injuries, mainly Bogdan. Remember, Bogdanovic missed a lot of games. And of course, it was very important for us. But we didn't look the same team as the year before. But you know what? I had this feeling. We decided to be there. I remember few of the guys that were part of the team, myself, Jan, for sure, Bogdan Bogdanovic, Epe Judo, had the possibility to go back to NBA or to go to NBA. But we decided to stay there, to try to win EuroLeague. So also in the tough moments, I remember, you know, Jericho, in tough moments, they practices were insane. It was like pure terrorism in the gym. I remember really I remember the legs coming out of the car and going to my apartments. It were like every step was a knife into my calf. But we stuck together. We were trying to do everything to come out of that bad moment, of those bad months. And then the most important things for me, and that we were all healthy before when the playoffs start. Right. And we had 10 days of very good practices, and we were playing very good during practices. So we felt that, okay, now we look good. You know, finally we look good. We didn't have a good season, but we look good. So we went to Athens because we to play the playoffs in Athens, in OAKA against that.
Yeah, wait. Don't jump ahead of me now. Let me get to that because there's one game I want to talk about before you get there that you know, because I was really paying attention to everything that was going on at that time, commentating the games. And as a matter of fact, it's a day of your coach's birthday on May 9th or March 9th, because I know that because it's my mom's birthday also. You guys played against Baskonia at home. You were still two games up on Panathinaikos and Chevenevezda for fourth place. And that game looked like it ruined your season. What went on after that game? I heard that wasn't a pretty scene, but then some things happened. There was a party, or you guys all got together as a team.
Yes, it was, as you say, Jacob's birthday. So he organized a dinner after the game, and despite the loss, we celebrated. And I remember this conversation with Jericho, and Marco Mordente, who is a former player, came to visit me, and we were together. He was very interested in talking with Jericho. And we had a conversation, and Jericho looked very confident. He said, you know, if we keep the fourth spot, it's very tough for everybody to come in Istanbul and beat us. And then we go to Final Four. And then, you know, maybe if you play two games, you have a chance to win EuroLeague. It looks so easy to say. But yes, it was a tough loss for us to protect the home court advantage on playoffs. But after that, also, we had more games, and we lost some of those. Yes. And but, you know, on that moment, we were trying to do the best that we could, and then to wait for playoffs and to see who was going to be the opponent.
I think this is the part that amazes me the most. You guys were 2-4 in the last six games of the season. You lost your home court advantage to Panathinaikos. You had to go to OAKA to play. Your team was essentially dying. I do this job for a living, and I predicted that you guys had no chance of going to the Final Four the way you finished the season. Because this, you know, these playoffs and the Final Four is all about momentum. And then in the first half, if you remember correctly, I don't know if you remember, you're down 1 or 2 in the first quarter. Then all of a sudden, Panathinaikos went 27-12 in the second quarter, and you were down 14 points at halftime. And I'm calling all my friends going, I told you, man. I told you Fenerbahce is done. I told you they have no chance. You see what I mean? Second half, you guys hold them to 8 points in the third quarter, fourth quarter. You win by 13. What was the change? What happened? It's crazy to think about it.
It's really crazy. Basketball is insane. And I remember that, of course, we were not happy and we were angry about how we played the first half. But how we started the third quarter, we were even worse, because they immediately ran up 15 points. I remember an alley-oop in transition, so the OAKA got fired with enthusiasm and stuff. And then, I don't know how, we start to, you know, defense by defense, offense by offense, points by points. Okay, I remember also that Bogdan, he started to play incredible, at an incredible level. He didn't miss a choice, or either to shoot the ball and scoring, either to pass the ball, assist. He attacked the big man on pick and roll and to draw a foul and one. I mean, he played, I think, the best games at the European stage of his life was those two games in OAKA, and allowed us to come back and win look easily, but it was very tough.
Did you ever talk about, as a team, like, put pressure on yourselves to say, hey, guys, the Final Four is in our hometown. We have to be there. What are we doing? Did that ever come up in conversation?
You want just to be the Final Four. It's not because in Istanbul, it was in Istanbul. You want to be there more. If it was somewhere else, you want to be there less. I mean, you want to be at the Final Four. And when you play basketball, you think about beating your opponents. And it was tough. All the European world media and fans were very skeptical about us going there and winning Oaxaca. But at the end of the day, we won both games. First time in EuroLeague.
EuroLeague history, yeah, that was. And it gave you the momentum, I think, because obviously after winning those two, Panathinaikos was done, and you knew, you pretty much knew you were going to win at home. But that gave you the momentum, I think, to forget about those last six games of the regular season.
Oh, for sure. For sure is, you know, as I said, everybody around us was very skeptical. But after 1 week, immediately we were the favorite to win the EuroLeague. You know? So, but we were the same. And this is basketball, you know, this is sport. And that's why I try to stay calm every time, because you need to be confident enough. Bobby Dixon, one of your guests in this podcast, always say the never high on your high, never lows on your never too low in your lows. I always say that, and really, we were like that, and we wanted to be part of this. And of course, we knew that playing in Istanbul, it was going to be a huge advantage for us.
You went to back to the Final Four again. This is your second, the team's third. What did you do anything different from one Final Four to the other? Did you know, you know, maybe that you put too much pressure on yourself the first time? Anything that you remember that you consciously said, all right, this year I'm going to try to do this, maybe get more sleep, maybe get more relaxed, maybe not worry about outside influences? Anything that you changed for that Final Four in Turkey?
No. I feel that we were more aware of ourselves.
As a team.
Yes, exactly. That group of guys, you know, the first Final Four in 2016, I think me, Bobby Dixon, Kalinic, Ekpe Udo, we were all new to that stage. The year after, after two seasons of EuroLeague, after a lot of basketball together, we were more aware of that stage. And of course, after 1 year, we were more... a team. Really, we were we stuck to each other. We felt more. We were more bonding, and I don't know. I feel more. We were a team in the locker room, on the court, and stuff. So I don't think we changed a lot. I mean, personally, me, I didn't change much on my routine. I'm very strict to my routine, but the awareness of myself and ourselves, it was different.
I'm not trying to make that Final Four seem easy, because there's no Final Four that you win that's easy, but you guys controlled essentially both games, Real Madrid and Olympiacos, in the finals. One question that I have for you, though, when you walked out in a semifinal game, I don't know if you noticed or not at the time that you were coming out to play, that the MVP of the Final Four 2 years ago that beat Fenerbahce in the first game in 2015, Andres Nocioni, who's one of the best players, was in street clothes. Was that a shock to anybody? I mean, did you guys like game plan for him? Because he's a physical player who can cause havoc on a court, not only offensively, but mostly defensively, and with his physicality. Did you guys game plan for him and then all of a sudden not see him on the court?
Yes, I remember that. But I remember he had an incredible Final Four in 2015. He had an incredible career and he had an incredible Final Four. But that year, he was not the main player anymore. It was Lul, because he was the MVP of the season. It was Ayon. It was Randolph. It was Doncic. He had a very good playoff series, but he had a very, very bad game against us in semifinal. But if I'm not wrong, we didn't prepare a lot against Nocioni, because we knew Nocioni, but he didn't have a big role in the team anymore as he used to be.
What was the attitude going in? And now you've beat Real Madrid, you've gotten through them. Epe Udo, who you said you didn't even know who he was before, had an incredible game. I mean, he's a big man who almost gets a triple-double in the semifinal game. 18 points, 12 rebounds, 8 assists. Everything's going right for you guys. When you walk into the Olympiacos game, you have to kind of, I know you have this confidence going into that final, but you have to be cautiously confident and cautiously optimistic. First of all, do you get any sleep the night before that championship game, knowing that you guys are rolling along so well? Don't you just want to play one game after another?
Me personally, after the games, I never sleep. I fall asleep, I don't know, 4 or 5 a.m. really, every game. Every game is like that. You know, it was a good feeling, because we were back where we wanted to be 1 year after. And you know, it's not easy. It's not granted. It's not automatic. It was hell of a grind to be there again. And we were happy to be there. But we knew that we had this, again, this incredible possibility to win the title and to make history. Out of players for ourselves, first of all, because me, I never win anything, as I told you before. So I was excited to win EuroLeague. It was going to be incredible for me, but also for the club, also for Turkey, playing in Istanbul. You know, a lot of those thoughts. But I remember that, I mean, I had this feeling. We were very locked in. We were very not satisfied, of course, because we remember the feeling of losing a final and it's awful. But we were excited to be there, and we could not wait to play this game.
Tell me two questions about afterwards. What's the party like? Because I wasn't invited.
The party? Of, you know, I had better parties for way less important victories in my career. But it was a good feeling. It was a good feeling just to have won it. It was too many people. We went to Zuma, is a restaurant of... Istanbul, and there were so many people, a lot of fans that wanted a selfie, wanted a piece of you, you know. Yeah. We couldn't enjoy it fully, I think. We couldn't talk to each other a lot, but my family was there, and we had fun. And the most special moment was, first of all, when we were the last to leave the restaurant from Zuma with my family and Jericho's family. We were the only one left in the restaurant.
Hey, Selko being the last one in the restaurant doesn't surprise me.
Yes, I know. After everybody went home and you could really enjoy the moment and talk with your family and have an extra drink that you really could enjoy it. But the day after, we had this parade in Istanbul, like the movies, you know. And so you go in the main street of Kadıköy in Baghdad Street, and all the fans were waiting for us. And okay, I knew that EuroLeague was important. I knew that it was incredible. But being over there with all those people celebrating for us and waving to us and trying to, you know, exchange a look with each one of us made me understand that it was really special for all our people. And it was really, it is a moment that I will never, never forget in my life.
That parade absolutely looked amazing. Every time I saw the videos of it, it looked like so much fun to be a part of. But one thing that everybody needs to know, when did you make the bet to get your hair cut off if you won the championship? When did that bet actually come?
First of all, it was made by Pero Antic, who...
Of course, who else would make a bet like that? You know how he is.
Always have been jealous of my long hair because it's bald, completely bald. Always have been jealous. No, but as you said, it was a very tough season for us. And during the season, we had a tough time. And during this tough moment, we were in the weight room, I think. And Pero told me, like, okay, if we really are going to cut your hair. And I say, yeah, like, okay, whatever. Like, I thought it was very tough for us to win EuroLeague because we were playing pretty bad. Right. And then after we won the title, immediately, first thing he told me, like, I'm going to cut your hair. I say, wait, let's celebrate first, you know, trophies and stuff. We go to the locker room and we will think about it. No, I mean, he immediately asked for these scissors, these tape scissors.
Yeah.
They're made to cut the tape, not to cut the hair.
Right. Especially all the hair you had. I mean, it was like you needed more like a saw than a pair of scissors. But
yeah, no. But in that moment, Joe, they really could also, I mean, he could do everything to me because I was so happy that, and after that, after the day after or 2 days after that, I went to the barbershop to have a proper haircut. My mom was the most happy person of the world, even more happy of the EuroLeague title. No, I was more happy because I finally cut my hair.
Gigi, you said they could have done anything to you, even the beard?
Now everybody will ask me, now if you win EuroLeague again, you're gonna cut your beard. I don't know why everybody want to be to see me as a young kid. I mean, I made this promise that if I will ever win a medal with the Italian basketball team, I will cut my beard. And also after we won the title, they asked me again, and they say that when we will win NBA title with the Fenerbahce, I will cut my beard.
All right, hey, let's finish up here with a few personal things. But you got so much stuff about your life, man. You're like one of the most sophisticated players that I've ever had to interview, and there is so much information about you. And one question I always like to ask, like, how long would it take a person that walk into your house that doesn't know what you do for a living to realize that you're a basketball player?
I have to say that I bought my first house last year, because usually, you know, I spent, 2 weeks per year at home, because I travel a lot, or either I stay in national team. So my parents' home, if they go in my bedroom, they realize that I do play basketball, because there are pictures of me, trophies and stuff. But in my apartments that I bought last year, there is
nothing there yet.
Nothing. There is some book, one guitar. There is, I don't know, some clothes. So they could have no idea about it.
One thing that I want to ask, when was the last time you hit a three-pointer without a beard on your face?
I think it was in Rome, maybe. My last year in Rome, I had a short beard. I was not completely shaved.
You had like the shadow.
Yeah, the shadow, exactly. So it was 2013.
One of the things that I found most interesting about your career, because I've interviewed on the crossover here with Tyrese Rice, Casey Rivers last week, Keith Langford, and all these guys have played like on 12 different teams in 10 years and 14 teams in 9 years. Some of them have played on two different teams in 2 different years. You've played for 6 different clubs in a 17-year career, and 2 of those teams were in America, the Pistons and the Celtics. How important do you think it is for a player to have that type of, that 5 years in Rome, the 5 years, the 3 years in Siena before, now the 5 years in Fenerbahce? How important do you think that is to a player in their progress and their future and their career?
Every player has a different path. You cannot predict each player's path. But of course, something is easier. For example, it was very good for me to have, for example, in Istanbul, same club, same city, same coach. So same structure. In Rome, for example, yes, it was same city, same club, same house, for example, but a lot of different coaches. Every year in Rome, except my last year, we changed coach in the middle of the season. For me, it's good to have, you know, okay, with Jericho, it's, you like the way it works, so you adapt and you know what is coming every day and you are ready for it. In Rome, it was tough because I was trying to have a role in this team, a defined role, but coaches were changing, ambitions were changing, so it was tough. But also, every coach gave me something different. So I was, you know, I had different input to be better as a player. Every player has a different path. For sure, if you have a good coach with a good club in the same city, you can grow up, you can be better easily, because a lot of points of references are the same. So you don't have to change, you don't have to readapt. But every path is different. And also in basketball, in life, you need to adapt. And so the better you understand this, the better you're going to succeed.
Man, that's not the answer that I expected from you, but it's the answer that I realized that I'm dealing with this sophisticated Italian basketball player, human being. You know, you're like interviewing somebody other than a basketball player. You're into art, you love music, you play the guitar, you draw, you like to even like old school, like vinyl LP records, man. It was what I used to call them back in the day. Where's all this deep cultural activity come from, and how much did the guys in the locker room make fun of you about it?
No, but I know that from outside I look like this weird that I mean, he's doing everything except basketball. But the thing is that I, you know, I leave this window open through my social media to know something more about me. And I would like to know more about music. I would like to know more about art, about guitar. But I don't know much, but I'm very curious. And I try to get more information and more data and more knowledge about this. I'm a very curious guy. This is the thing. You know, now I'm one of the oldest of the locker room and nobody will dare to take fun of me. but I know that they see me, and of course we joke, and I like to joke also about myself. I like to joke in the locker room, to take fun of everybody, and I like also to take fun of me. So I know that they see me as a different kind of person, let's say. But really, and also everybody tell me, you're such an intellectual player because you read books. Just because they see the books that I shared on Instagram, but I have a lot of teammates that they read a lot of books, but maybe they don't share on Instagram, so then nobody knows it. Like Lovren, like Nando De Colò, Sinan Guler, Bogdanovic suggests me incredible books to read. But, you know, I shared on social media, so everybody thinks that they know something more about me, but maybe because just I'm more open than my teammates.
Your old teammate, Epic Udo, had a book club. Hey, look, I want to talk about two relationships in your life. I know there's a lot that are important to you, but number one, of course, is your wife or girlfriend?
Girlfriend.
Girlfriend. How long have you guys been together?
5 years.
5 years. I saw the video that the EuroLeague did. You guys look so happy, like strolling through the streets of Istanbul and learning about different cultures and different cities. What is it? I saw you playing the guitar and it was like a look that you guys had that was just like self-appreciation or self-respect for each other. How important is that relationship to you in your career?
Basically, we start to hang out together when I moved to Istanbul. It's important, you know. I look for some kind of balance in my life to allow me to play basketball and to practice good. And for sure, should give me balance. We hang out good together. We feel we like to share things and to experience things. So, of course, she's a big part of my life, of my career. And that's why I'm very happy every time to celebrate every kind of success with her.
And you know, my last name is a Lithuanian name because of my dad. But I mentioned to you about my mom before. I think I told you she's Napolitana. My mom was Napolitana. So, you know, no matter what, my house was 99% Italian when I was growing up. So if my mom was here today and she was your mom, as I know your mom is extremely Italian, as you already explained to us, how many times you get the question, when are you getting married and when am I going to have grandchildren?
You know what? Not a lot.
You don't? From the Italian mother? There's no way.
No. I don't know why, not a lot. The worst thing is when we go to weddings in summertime. That's the moment when a lot of questions. So that's why I try to keep every wedding that I'm invited. But yes, this is a typical, but also, you know, whenever I will get married, next question is when you will have kids and then when will something else. So yeah. It's part of life. Being a basketball player, you are used to not listen to, you know, voices from around you and your life. But of course, if it comes from mom, it's different.
Yeah, but sometimes that voice is living with you also and sleeping next to you sometimes. So you have to be careful. We'll skip over that part. My next relationship question is of course, a good friend of mine and your coach, the guy that's been with you during your duration at Fenerbahce. You've said so many great things about him. What makes him so special and why? Because we all know how difficult he is as a coach and how demanding he is.
First of all, first time that I started to play for him and to work with him, I was impressed by his desire and his ambitions and his hunger of being perfect, you know, despite he already won everything. He was the more hunger person in the arena. So, you know, if your coach is like that, you need to be like him, at least to try to be close to him. And of course, he's a great basketball mind. He thinks about basketball 24 hours a day, and he liked to take inspiration from other teams, even from NBA, to try to, let's say, copy something that can work also in Europe. But end of the day, also he's a very loyal person. He's a very truth person. And so if you are intellectually honest, you know that everything he tells you is for the best of the team, first of all, and for the best of you as a player. So for sure, he pushed you to the best, and he asked for the best. He's very, as you know, it's very tough to work with him. But at the same time, he's very, he's nice when you reach result and you reach your goals and you are part of his team. I feel happy to be his player, you know. It's something that makes me really happy and really proud.
I've always said that one thing about Zelko is he's one of the most difficult and demanding coaches. I should say people, not only coaches, but he's one of the most difficult, demanding people I've ever had in my life. But he was always fair. Even in his toughest moment, he was always fair. And you always felt like he was trying to get the best out of you.
And it's not, you know, for sure you had the different coaches and you know that it's not so granted, to be fair.
No, not at all. You know, this wouldn't be the crossover, Gigi, if I didn't ask you this question. One time I saw a video where he gave the slap to Kostas, and I've seen him slap guys all the time, you know. I mean, just that's his way of waking people up or getting their attention, whatever. And then the timeout this year went, fuck you, Gigi, that told me. Please tell me about the...
My phone was on fire the game after in those days. And, you know, it's part of the package, let's say. You play for him and it means that you play for a great club, with great ambitions, great contract. But this is part of the package. And in that, you know, this happened a lot of times, also in practice, also in
meetings. Of course.
But there are not cameras, so yeah. Nobody know about it. And in that moment, really, I was more frustrated and angry because the team was not playing good. Then if you take it personal with Jericho, it's over. You need to really... Yeah. suicide, because you cannot handle it. So I learned to take the technical advices and to isolate everything else. And nothing. This is the secret to survive. And he was very angry with me. He was very angry with the team. I was very angry with myself. I was very angry with the team. We were on the same page, and this came out on camera, and it was mediatically a bomb. But for me, it was just another day in the office.
Exactly. But, you know, the people on the outside, they don't understand that, and they don't understand that the actual internal respect you have, because as a player, you can walk up to another player and say those words and tell them to wake up, and there's that mutual respect, and it comes from coaches too, and people that have never been in that situation I can imagine what your phone was doing. My phone was ringing off the hook. Did you see your old coach? Did you see what he did? And it was really funny. I said, he's
then after also a lot of years of us having a lot of success in EuroLeague, we were really struggling, and that looked like from outside. You see, coach is blaming players, so everybody is also waiting for this and maybe creating something out of it. Honestly, I'm very happy that our locker room is so healthy that we were really only frustrated about the loss and the bad performances. Right. Other than that, it's really all rumors and noise that we really didn't give, you know what.
Let's get off of that subject now. Let's get something. You wrote a book already as a player. I mean, not something a typical player does and writes a book so early. Usually that happens when the career is over and you look back on things. Does that mean we're going to get a part two to this book also?
I totally agree with you. I also didn't like players that wrote a book in the middle of their career.
Wait. I didn't say I didn't like it. I just said it was different.
No. Me personally, I didn't like it. Every year something great can happen. Maybe next year I'm going to be MVP of the season, MVP of Final Four. I don't think so, but maybe it will happen. So what I do? I do another book? No. But a friend of mine had came out with this formula talking about my life and my career through objects, because every chapter of my book I started talking about an object, and from that object I talk about my life. For example, a NBA poster in my bedroom when I was a kid, I talk about my NBA experience the EuroLeague title, the Little Cup, I talk about those seasons with the Fenerbahce. So that was a formula that I say, okay, this is not a biography. I'm talking about myself, not in a chronological way. So let's try to do it. And really, I was having fun. It was a good experience. And he had a pretty good success in Italy. Also, has been translated in Turkish. You know, I really like a lot to read. And so I was waiting for this experience to write a book. And I did it, and it's part of my life now.
Yeah, I love the idea. I think it's a great idea. Just, you know, you've had someone to help you out, because obviously we don't have enough time when you're playing during the season to sit down and write a book. But what's it mean to you to be the president of this EuroLeague Players Association, which is your, obviously it's been the first, you've been named the first president of this association. And what's it mean to you as a person, not only as a player, but as a person?
It's nice because I think we can do a lot of things to help players to have a better career, to focus more on basketball, and to eventually have help them, the players, to have also a better after career. And I like to be part of this, to be involved with this. And what I like the most is that now when they're going to be taking decision, you know, also players' voice will be listened. And so we brought we bring this our voice to the table when decision gonna be taken, and you know, there is a lot of work behind, and in these days, you know, we've been we had a very good step for us to reach an agreement with the EuroLeague for the salaries in this situation of the coronavirus. Mm-hmm. But really, there are a lot of things. First of all, to have the players have a better career. To have a better standard, let's say, between the teams, to, you know, so players can think only about basketball and focus on their performances. And also, eventually, with time, we're gonna hopefully gonna give help also for the after career. And right. But mainly, as I said, we want that the take decision players' voice will be listened. And so I take proud of this, and I hope that I'm happy for what we did so far. I'm sure that there is a lot of ground to cover, that we really can do something important for EuroLeague also.
Well, I congratulate you, and I'm proud of you too, man. It's an incredible accomplishment, because you're kind of elected by your peers, and I think as a player that means so much to most people. I also noticed, because you do so many things, Gigi, it's crazy. I noticed on your Instagram, as I was kind of stalking you the last 5 days, you have a link where it's called Un Respiro por Obia, which is your hometown, which means a breath for Obia, your hometown. And you had a goal of 250,000 euros. And as of like 2-3 hours ago when I looked it up, it was 374,000 euros for her. And you're also a spokesperson for your country and also Turkey with this virus COVID-19 pandemic. How did you get involved in that, and how did you do so well? $250,000 goal and 374,000 has already been donated?
Honestly, it's not my, as I said, I didn't create it. Pretty close person to me asked me to give some visibility to this link. In Italy, I'm not surprised that people try to help each other in tough situation. And of course, this is a tough situation for Italy, for Europe, for the world. And really, a lot of people donate money to help the health system, because the worst thing in this coronavirus is that health system is going to collapse. So we reached a good amount of money to keep the emergency away from our hometown. And also now I'm involved to collecting money to buy food to people, because after health, the most important problem now for this coronavirus is that people is stopping to work, so they cannot really feed their family. So we are involved in bringing food to families that really cannot afford to go to the grocery and buy food. You know, and now that I'm not playing, I like to, in America they call it
the give back. And me as an athlete, I have a good platform that I can share my values, my programs, my projects, and to tell people that, you know, we can do this together. You know, it doesn't mean that you need to donate a huge amount of money, but if everybody can donate what they can donate, together we can help people to have a better life in this emergency. And this is what should be all about.
Well, it's amazing, man, because my next one is something we've already talked about. You're involved with two other Italian athletes. One's a high jumper, Gianmarco Tamberi, and then Gregorio Patrinieri, I believe is how we pronounce it, who's an Olympic swimmer for Italy. And of course, you, Gigi Datomi, and you guys kind of cheated a little bit on the name because your project's called GGG. They didn't go with the Luigi. We went with Gigi, but I get it. You guys have been together for only a year, and this project is to help Italian doctors go to Africa to help kids that are not, that don't have the availability to medical practices and doctors. Is that, how do you get into something like this, man? As a player, I don't understand. Maybe because there wasn't so many opportunities like that back when I played to get into, but now it's like, this is amazing to me that you're doing all these things. You're doing for food and now doctor for people in Italy. Tell me about this project and how and why.
Of course, us as a player, we are very focused on our world, but you know, I feel very lucky. Also, these guys that are tremendous guys, they are incredible, good guys. We feel very close to each other, and they are both very good fans of basketball. The high jumper Gianmarco Tamberi is incredible, very good basketball player, and Gregorio Patrinieri is a huge New York Knicks fan. So basically, nothing we say. Why we don't?
I'm sorry for New York Knicks fans, but anyway.
Yeah, I know. I don't know how he came out with a New York Knicks fans, but he's a huge New York Knicks fan. And basically, we said we have a huge platform for Italy. Let's use it, you know. And of course, there is people behind it, and especially Francesco Carotti, who is my best friend, and the guy with who I wrote the book, and they helped about this, because, you know, to create an event, there is a lot of work behind. But we had this feeling, this will to create something nice for kids. Last year, we had created a very nice event in Cervia, who is in the Adriatic coast. And basically, a lot of kids, I think around 100 kids, came to play basketball, to have some athletic lessons about high jumping, some lessons about how to swim better and stuff. And with the same event, we tried to collect the money and we decided together to this foundation who were sending the hospital Bambino Gesù in Italy, who is very famous in Rome, who sent these projects to send the doctors to Africa to give health assistance to kids and people that cannot afford this health assistance. And it's something, you know, that make me feel better. But the best feeling that I get out of these events and these programs and these days is that me, and the other athletes, we involved a lot of people. We create a little bit of knowledge more about what's happening, not only in Italy, but on the world. And we, you know, we suggest to people to give a little bit of what we have to help somebody else. And this, I mean, this is a little bit ideally, but it's something that we should all do. And especially nowadays, everybody's suffering. But really, I feel so happy when we do this kind of days, that really, it looks like we are doing for somebody else. But at the end of the day, we are doing for ourselves, because really we feel happy to do it, and happy because we realize how lucky we are that we have this health assistance, for example, and that we are healthy and we can do everything we want in life.
Gigi, you said it so perfectly, because I get that same feeling when I do through EuroLeague and we do the one team things with the kids, the disadvantaged kids. And it's like you're putting a smile on their face, but they have no idea what they're giving back to me when I come home. And I just feel so happy. You know, it's amazing feeling. But congratulations on that foundation also, man. That sounds amazing. And you've only been together for 1 year, so you got a long way to go with that. Now, I know you're a musician. You want to be a rock star when this is all over with? You got this Pathway to Paris thing on your Instagram. Patti Smith, Michael Stipes. I'm not sure a lot of people know who Michael Stipes is. You know who Michael Stipes is, right? From REM. And then you got Ben Harper, who's one of my favorites. Are you playing the guitar with these guys and like singing, or what's the deal? What are you doing with these people?
No, listen, this is life. Life is incredible. I got involved with this project. Pathway to Paris is not my project. It's project of Jesse Smith, who is daughter of Patti Smith. Mm-hmm. And yes, is another topic. Let's say is taking care of the war. You know, getting I don't know how to say it in English to avoid the pollution. To you know, to be sustainable. And it's another incredible, important topic of this moment. And she involved me in this project. So we did a live Instagram. She did it, and with an incredible guest. Like you said, they were incredible. Also, there was Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers. There was the bass player from the Strokes. So, yes, it was incredible frontline. And with between all those names, right after Johnny Depp, it was me playing with the guitar. It was incredible. Yes.
So you played the guitar. You played the guitar with all these people.
I did play the guitar. Yes, it was a video. But I did play the guitar. Yes, yes, it's incredible. It's incredible. So I can say that my first concert ever, it was with Patti Smith, Ben Harper, all these guys, you know, like.
That's just amazing to me, man. You know, while I was playing in Madrid, I started to take up the saxophone a little bit. I played some sax. And I always had that dream of like, you know, later on, maybe being, you know, some sort of musician, but it never came to fruition. And all of a sudden, you got it done. I'm like so jealous.
I don't know how I got involved with this, but I'm not good with the guitar. I just played to have some kind of fun. But Jesse involved with me. Of course, I couldn't say no, but I'm very happy to participate. And, you know, 20 years, I will make a poster out of this concert. And in 20 years, I will say, you know, I had a concert in Wembley. Maybe we were 100,000 people. It was me, Patti Smith, and Ben Harper.
Yeah, of course.
Somebody will remember about it.
You know, after doing this whole interview with you, we're just about to be done here. I was thinking, when I saw the EuroLeague special on you, the spotlight on you and your beautiful girlfriend, I was thinking to myself, I'm like, man, if he's not married, he better marry that girl, you know? But now after talking to you and seeing how actually sophisticated you are and all the things that you do, give her a message from me and say you better marry this guy quick, man, before he gets away. She needs to get married to you right now. Hey, you're 33. How much longer you got to go, man? You've been playing this game for 17 years.
Good questions. I don't know. Really, honestly, I mean, if I decide also now to stop playing basketball, if I look on my back, I say I had an incredible career, really. Mm-hmm. Look, if I think about when I was really first years of Italian league or national team, that I didn't have minutes of a team in Italy or didn't have minutes in national team. So I overachieved my goals and my expectations. But also mm-hmm. I still have a lot of fun in playing. I feel good, I feel the desire to compete. So until I have this, until I can perform, until they put me on a good role in a good team, I will play. And then every year I will decide, I'm ready to do everything in life. And this is my mindset.
You know, it's an incredible platform for all these things that you're doing too. So, I mean, you're not only playing to play more years, You're indirectly playing to help a lot of other people other than yourself. Most of us play as many years as we can to make as much money as we can. But in your case, it's kind of double-edged, you know, because you're actually helping people. And this platform of being a professional player will help you help more people.
And I feel really, I think I'm not doing enough. And I think a lot of my colleagues, really, because if, as you know, as a basketball player, you are very selfish because you are very focused on yourself, on your life. For us, it's our life. But it's not the most important thing, you know. And we should find a better balance in everything, in priorities, let's say. Of course, my priority must be basketball because I have responsibilities also. But we need also to really, I don't want to say this to be the good guy and everything, but really, we should pay attention on who is not lucky like us, not lucky enough. So we should take care of them.
You know, I think everybody who has the chance to help out, it takes some people a little bit longer or some people a shorter time, depending on what. I mean, I know for myself personally, I can honestly admit that at your age, I never thought about helping other people. But as time grows on and you grow up and you become more mature, and I think everybody has a different time to look back and do that. Some people, unfortunately, like you're probably saying indirectly, they don't do that. But I think everybody has their moment. Yours has come a little bit earlier. And don't ever think, please, for a minute that you're not doing enough, because you're doing more than 98% of the players that I know out there. So be proud of yourself for what you're doing.
No, I'm not blaming myself. I'm happy for more than doing, but really, I'm honest with myself, and I know that I can do more. Everybody of us can do more. I can do more as a basketball player. I can do more as a brother, as a son, and also in these terms. And everybody should be focused on what we can do more to help the community and to help this world to be better.
Last question before I close. Gianni Petrucci, who's the president of the Italian Federation, says that as soon as you want it, you got his job as a president of the Italian Federation. Is that a possibility for you?
I told the president, I say, president, this is not good to say when I'm still playing, because this means that you don't want me to play anymore. And I don't know. I'm not ready. I know that I'm not ready to do this. It will be an incredible challenge. Mm-hmm. I don't see myself in that position now. But I don't know. Life, as I said before, I'm ready to quit basketball now. I'm ready to everything. If life will bring me in that direction, I will think about it. But now I know that I'm not ready, because I had no idea how to carry a federation, especially in Italy, which is very important. We'll see. Really, I don't know what to do after my career. And this is something that I should focus more on, because, you know, there are 17 years behind me. There are not 17 years ahead of me in basketball.
No, there's a lot more years ahead of you that you're going to be out of basketball. Believe me, I've figured it out that I've been out of basketball twice as much as I actually played it. So yeah, start planning. But I think you got a good start, my man. First of all, I just want to thank you so much for your time and patience, for being here with me. You're a man of your word. You told me you were busy, you couldn't do it just yet, and as soon as you were able to do it, you got in touch with us. And we did it. I've been looking forward to this podcast for quite a while. You know, something that was even more than I expected. It's better than I expected. You're a special person. There aren't many people like you out there playing this game. And I wish you nothing but the best of luck in the future. And when you do decide to give it up, man, it's going to be a sad day for me, because I'm going to miss you on the court. Gigi, that told me, man, you are one class act, man. Thank you very much for your time and your patience.
No, thank you, Joe. Thank you, Joe. It was a pleasure. I'm a big fan of your podcast, and so I'm very, very happy to have been part of it, and I will keep on listening, keep being a fan.
Thank you, my man. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas. If you like what you've heard, subscribe now so you don't miss an episode, and leave us a review on iTunes and Apple Podcasts. You can also get in touch via Twitter and Instagram at EuroLeague using the hashtag ELCrossover, or on Facebook at the EuroLeague.